describe her childhood in Tiberias prior to 1948, what Tiberias was like and so on.
كيف كانت طبرية بوقت طفولتك قبل 48؟
كنا عايشين مع بعض صدقني، ولا تقول إنه يعني مثلا في تفرقة أو زي الأهل.
Prior to 1948, they had great relations. They were very good neighbors, especially during the Pesach. And the Jews, they don't eat bread with yeast. And they don't eat certain things. Now when that day is over, the week celebration of Pesach is over, the Arab neighbors will bring big trays full with food and bread baked to their brother Jews, and they would salute them in their feast. Now the Jews in return, they would fill that, they clean it, after they eat, they would clean it, they fill it with all kinds of nuts and sweets and bring it back to the Muslims. That is the kind of relations they've had.
This
is even after May 15, the war. Her uncle still used to work in the hot springs of Tiberias. And they used to get some tickets for free as an employee there to enter the hot springs. He gave it to his Jewish neighbor. After the war, he still got some of the tickets and he went back and gave to his Jewish friends to go and use the hot springs there. And she says, after a while, her husband's friends, 10 years ago even, they went to a hotel, Rome Beach, now it's there. And they sat down, the owner of the hotel had some foreigners and important guests. He left them and stayed with his favorite friends, locals, grew up together in Tiberias. That was that kind of
relationship.
Does she remember anything about the British Mandate era? I mean, politically speaking, not just about the culture of her neighbors from her childhood and what it was like.
تتذكري كيف مش بس علاقتك مع الجيران بس وقت انت دبل بريطانيا تتذكري اشي بالاحداث السياسيه كيف كانوا البريطانيه هون
صدقني كانت بريطانيا ظالمه
She remembers those days. She was born in 1931. And in 1936 we had this big riot here. The strike of 1936 is very famous. My father's cousin died in Haifa, was martyred, killed. She says they were very brutal, the Arab. They are not a just country. The British were very bad and rude to them. They would have sometimes, demonstrations, non-violence demonstrations, but they were used to hit and kill. She says, even whatever the Jews did, even if they have guns, they never even talked to the Jews. They always came on the side of the Jews against the Arabs, for those non-violence. And she remembers the day that they brought them out of the houses from Tiberias, brought them to the beach all day when she was a child to search their houses. And she says, especially in 1947, as the British army were leaving, they used these automatic machine guns shooting people on the streets, the Arabs, as they were leaving. They're killing them in cold blood.
The British were
dead. Yes. She's an eyewitness to these events. In 1947, the British were withdrawing. As they were withdrawing, all the forces coming down to Haifa, they were driving in their cars, people standing to see them leaving. They were shooting at people, killing them without any warning or anything. Just because they are Arabs.
The British were doing it.
Yes. She's an eyewitness to these events. Her family and her husband's family, they never made any problems. There was the division of 1947. Something that happened, and they never cared. It took place, and that's it. And the war is still. They're not upset about
it.
Because they went back to visit them and they wanted to bring food to them, and he says, no, we came just to salute you. And look at this situation. Their neighbors stayed where they are in Tiberias and they became refugees in Nazareth. The government are bad.
You will come in our organization and our refugee camp. My name is Ziad Abbas. I born in the Hesha refugee camp. I grew up here. And we are struggling not to die here as refugees. We are isolated. As refugees, we are isolated totally. The international community ignored us. The Arab community ignored us. And sometimes we feel our leadership ignored us as refugees. We were the fuel of the revolution, Palestinian revolution. And what they did for us, what they achieved for us, Oslo agreement, this kind of agreements. And all the problem is they want to compromise in our right. And when you speak about right of return, for example, the rights of the Palestinian refugees to return back to their homeland, it became like sensitive issue. Sensitive issue. But when you think about the other refugees in the world, it's okay, they have a right. And we are not very stupid people. Sometimes we were naive, we don't understand the things as it is, but now we are not very stupid. We know what's going on in the world. We saw how the refugees from Sarajevo and Kosovo returned back to their houses after a few months. We saw them. We saw how the refugees from East Timor, they returned back to their homeland. Why when it's coming to the Palestinian refugees is a different issue? And me, I didn't ask, when we ask about right of return, we don't ask about miracles to come from the sky to solve our problems. We ask the international community to respect the declaration of the human rights. We ask the international community to respect the international laws. And we ask them to respect and to implement the United Nations resolutions, which we have very clear resolution dealing with the refugees issue number 194. Look, any proposal, any initiative, any project, any peace process, anyone, anything will ignore right of return, it will fall down. The key of the peace in the Middle East is the right of return. Without the right of return, no peace in the Middle East. For me now, I am 40 years old, I will not accept any political solution. I don't feel equal like you. I want to be like you. From where you are?
United States.
Yeah, I want to be equal like you. I have two hands, I have two legs. You are living in your country? Mm-hmm. Are you living in your country?
Yes.
Okay, I want to be like you. I want to live in my village. At the same time, if this weak right of return will destroy Israel, yes. Right of return will destroy the pure Jewish state. But it will not destroy Israel. And it will not kick the Israelis outside. We accept them. We want to live with them in one state equal. To be equal. All of us together. But we don't want them to have pure Jewish state. Because this country, it's not for one religion. And no time for religion fighting. We don't accept that. This is one of the Palestinian refugee camps, which was established in 1948. And directly after the catastrophe, after our parents, they were uprooted from their villages in 1948, the Red Cross took the initiative to release the Palestinian refugees. And this is the history, actually, we learned it from our families. From our mothers and our fathers, grandfathers. And this is the history, we saw it on their faces day by day, and the way how they try to minimize the obstacles that was faced us when we were children in this refugee camp. Most of the Palestinian refugees, they left outside Palestine. When I speak about Palestinian refugees, I speak about more than 5 million refugees. And which it was the number of the people they were uprooted in 1948, it was 800,000. But last period, it became like now more than 5 million refugees. I remember this according to the story I heard from my mother. My mother told me the story that in 1948 they were bombing villages, and she had two children that period, and she was worried about her children. So when they bombed our village called Zakaria village, she took the my brother and sister, and she went to the mountain, and she was waiting there. She closed the door of the house, and she took the key with her, and she was waiting in the mountains. And she was thinking that after a few hours, she will return back to her house. But the occupation, that spirit was moving at stage by stage. The village, the mountains, and she was moving slowly, slowly, until she was around the border. Yeah. More than 500 villages in that period. And you can see that. The people, they were living here, the north of Palestine, during the catastrophe, they moved to Lebanon, to the north, and to Syria. The people, they were living around the West Bank, which is, this is West Bank, this area. Now, this is West Bank. Without the wall, of course. They moved down to West Bank. So my mother, she moved to the borders, and she was waiting in the graves for a while, to the mountains. Not the graves, it was, she was waiting in the caves. Sorry for my English language at morning, it's to the caves, and they were waiting there, because the moment when they can return back to their homeland. But, of course, no chance, so the Red Cross took the initiative and collected the refugees, and they established the refugee camps. The same here, the villages around Gaza Strip, they moved to Gaza Strip. And that spirit was like a big shock for the people. They were farmers living in their land and taking care to their lands, and they have simple life. Suddenly they are living in tents. And it was a big shock for them. And especially the situation during winter. Many families lost their children because the weather, it was very bad, and storms, etc. And me, my family, in personal level, my family lost a brother for us. He born in 1949, and he did directly after a few months. And most of the families, it was happened like this. Until December 49, the United Nations took the resolution to establish the UNRWA. United Nations. And 1st of May 1950, the UNRWA implemented their services. So it's this period actually until, and between the people, they were living in tents, and when they moved to small rooms, which it was the United Nations start to build this small rooms in 1952. Many people died, and especially children. The United Nations, they took the first decision, they took it to replace the tents. So they decided it's not fair to leave the people in the tents, and maybe the refugees issue, it will take time. And it will take like maybe a few years. So they designed such kind of rooms. And they thought it will stay like temporary. It will not be for a long time. They will not stay abroad for like more than 10 years. So maybe they will return back to their houses, or they solve their problem with the refugees before 10 years. So here you can see part of the tents. Uh-huh. And here you can see the rooms. Temporary building. Each room, it was 9 square meters. And each family had one room. And the average of the families in that period was 6.3. Which does mean each 6 person and 1/3, they were living in 9 square meters.
Let's dedicate this song right here to all Palestinians, all indigenous people right here in the United States, all oppressed people. This is Cycle Realm, The Killing Fields, War Story, Book 2.
My name is Osama Zahaika. Osama, O-S-A-M-A, Zahaika, Z-A-H-A-I-K-E-H.
And how long ago did this problem in your area, you live in this area, no?
Yes, I do. The problem actually started since 1984. But actually, the case was in court. Until last Sunday, When they come down here with bulldozers and loads of police forces came down with the contractor here, and they actually forced us to work at our land. They uprooted 150 trees. We couldn't do anything because they are the strongest side. We are the weakest. Now, we went on the same day to court, and we got a court order of stopping them not working there. We come the next day, and we showed them at the media present even that we have a court order, and they did not stop working.
Did they have guns and so on, and they actually said, you must work here?
They did not force us to work personally, but they forced us that they will work here, and they worked actually. Yes, of course, they had big machine guns, the M16s, the American machine guns.
And they came and they just said, it doesn't matter, we're just going to be functioning here, we don't care that since 1984 this has been a dispute, this has to happen now.
Yeah, they said we have papers, but we asked them to produce them, to show us. They said, no, you know, contact your lawyer. We contact our lawyer and there was nothing. He said to us, I've got nothing from the court. So he did not know what they were talking about.
So then you left and you came back the following day and?
Yeah, we came the following day with a court order. And we showed it to the contractor and the police officer. And they said, this is not a court order. It was a court order. I can't show it to you. It comes out from an Israeli court. And it was obvious and clear for everybody that they should not be working here.
And then what happened afterward?
They wanted to work on that day. We contested against the bulldozers non-violently with the presence of international media, Israelis from peace movements, and we managed to stop them actually working on that certain specific day. The next day it was raining, they did not work. They come the following, the day after, and they brought a handwriting paper that they have a court order. You know, it's the first time in my life that I see a court order written by hand, stating like they can work in our land. And we asked them if we can get a copy, and they refused. We did not get a copy, but they kept on working.
So they showed up, there was a day of rain, a break. They come back, and they have a handwritten note that says, we can work here.
Exactly.
And so then how did you react to that?
We went to court again, actually. On that day, we went to High Supreme Court in Israel. And now we managed to get a new court order from the High Supreme Court in Israel that the municipality, the contractor, and the man who claims that he owns the land from the Jewish side, none of them are allowed to be in this area. So they should leave now, immediately.
And earlier you were suggesting to us that you thought the police officer or even some of the people with him may be involved.
That's correct. Actually, it's a mafia work. It's a gang work. Because, first of all, the Jerusalem municipality here confiscated some of the land for the benefit of the people. When I say the people, I mean the Palestinian people in East Jerusalem. And this land actually has been given to this Jewish guy to serve his interest of building a new settlement here. And it wasn't for the servant of the people here who lives here from Jebel Mukaber. And the police come with the contractor, helping him out against the law instead of implementing the law.
And did he have police officers with him?
Yes, of course.
And so did you say you recognized that particular police officer as being from near to here?
Yes, of course. We know him. He's a Jewish police officer. He's serving at this police station here. But I think there is something going on between this police officer and the contractor, and of course the municipality, and it's...
And so what are you expecting will happen today? We see that there's a bulldozer that is continuing to work.
Yes. Actually, we don't know. Maybe they'll come to us again with a new handwritten paper and say, we have a court order allowing us to work here. So we don't know what to expect anymore.
And what do you think all of this building is about exactly?
The plan is to build here a settlement of 560 units up to 700 units with two hotels on the top. And it's going to be a Jewish settlement in the middle of a Palestinian neighborhood, in the heart of Palestinian neighborhood, which was occupied in 1967. This is part of the occupied territories.
And can you describe for us, please, just the area around here?
Well, this is a Palestinian area, pure Palestinian area. It's called Sawahre, and this is Jabal Mukaber neighborhood of Sawahre. And as you look around, you don't see any Jews here. It's all Palestinian houses. And they come to build in the middle, in the heart of this neighborhood, create a new body or a strange body, a new settlement, Jewish settlement. It's not accepted. It's not very welcomed by us, to be honest with you, because we know the aim of us to kick us out of our land, our homes.
And how long have you been in this area?
I was born here. My father was born here. My grandfather was born here, and so on.
The Americans vetoed the UN General Assembly resolution to protest the building of the wall. The Europeans in the General Assembly all abstained. International community all over the world seems to disavow the Palestinian problem. I come here, I look around, I see that everything the Palestinians tell me is true, and yet it goes on. Even as we're sitting here waiting, we watch this bulldozer, land mover tearing the ground up. What do you think about in these times?
To be honest with you, that bulldozer, I feel it's tearing me down. It's not the land, it's not my land. And we feel unjust, to be honest with you. That's one thing. The second thing, we're trying to show the whole world that maybe there is Palestinian violence, but this is Palestinian violence come as a reaction because of this, because of what you see on the ground. They come, provocate us, and then what do they expect from us? Just to sit down and clap to them? So that's what it is. And we want the whole world to know that these people come, we don't go to them, they come to us.
Your name, please.
Ahmed Zahaik. Ahmed Zahaik.
And how long have you lived in this place?
I'm in Turkey.
Turkish time. You know when the Turks used to be here? تتذكر انك انت طول الوقت بكيت هنا انت وابوك وجدك وجد جدك وهيك
في دور تركيا من سنة 2018 لغاية الحين لغاية 2004 وانا موجود في البلاد هذه.
انت شخصي بس جدك وابوك وجد جدك
وجد ابويا وجد ابويا وجد ابويا يعني كلهم.
He remembers since 2018, him personally, himself. But I mean, like, of course, his father, his grandfather, and so on.
Perhaps you could ask him, tell us what his thoughts are about this situation.
بقول لك احكي بصراحة يعني كيف انت حاس لما تشوفهم يشتغلوا في أرضك يعني لأن الناس راح تسمع حكيك احكي بشكل عام.
شو حاس يعني بتحب واحد يجي يطلع من بيتك.
Do you like to see someone coming, taking you away from your home?
And we see that there are some small trees here.
هذول الشجرات اللي خلعوهن ودينا زرعناهن بتعرف انت انه خلعوهن
هذا شجر 160 شجرة لما الآخر هناك كله شجرات مع الواد هذا كله شجر 24 سنة إله الشجر هذا 44 سنة 44 سنة يجي خلعوه في لحظة وين جرت هذه وين الدولة الديمقراطية هذه وين الديمقراطية
160 olive trees they uprooted we replanted he wasn't here we and you know the villagers from here went down to the land and replanted some of the trees some of the good trees you know what I mean because some of them were damaged actually it was impossible to replant them again
how many children do you have
two
was it his thought that this land would always be in his family
مية في المية هذا يعني لو إنه تروح روح مش راح أطلع منها.
This person, even if he's gonna lose his soul, he's not gonna leave the land.
شكرا.
No,
your name?
My name is Salah Zahaika.
And have you always lived here?
دائما سكنت
هنا. Yeah.
How did you first come to find out that this was happening here?
أول سؤال يعني بقول لك كيف عرفت إنه بلش يصير الشغل في الأرض هنا يعني. Two months ago, they advertised an Israeli newspaper that they're going to start construction work here on the Jabal Mukabir, in this neighborhood of Sawahri, that they're going to start building 560 units for the Jewish settlers.
Did you see the ad somewhere yourself first, or did someone come to you and say, hey, look, they're going to do this in our neighborhood? Or?
Yeah, friends of his told him that they wrote it at Yidot News, Ahronot newspaper, Israeli newspaper. So he brought that paper and read it himself, and then he went to, took it to the lawyer himself and showed it to the lawyer.
And so were you thinking at that time, I better be ready for something unusual to happen?
He had doubts actually that maybe something will take place here. And then he actually prepared people here and informed them, if you see any kind of strange actions on here, just inform me. And that's what happened last Sunday, actually, and then they informed him straight away, and that's when we all come here.
When you came here on Sunday and you saw what was happening, just describe how you felt in reaction to what was happening.
You know, as a reaction, like you feel like if someone is coming to take your soul out of you, to kill you in some ways. And actually, it's self-explanatory. I mean, that's what he says. He's willing to do anything to stop them doing it.
And when he came here, did you see armed men, like 10 armed men standing around? What did you see immediately in terms of a military presence?
Yes, there was more than 10. There was plenty of police officers, heavily armed, actually. Because they knew they had no court order to be here, so they were very, very well prepared, because they knew people would react, but they will not accept the fact that they will start working in the land here. So that's what happened.
Did he try to approach them in any way and say to them, you know, you must stop this before going to the courts? Did you try to say to them immediately here, hey, go away from here right now? Or?
رحت عليهم وقلت لهم طوالي
انا yeah, yeah he went to himself personally to them he tried to talk to them and they said to him we have papers allowing us to be here to working here but he did not see anything of allowing them to work here but he did not see a thing of with them that not allowing them to be here at that time at that moment
MTK on the MIC reporting from East Jerusalem. Occupied Palestine, as some would have it, it's becoming that right in front of our eyes. The sound you hear in the background is the sound of a large land mover, which is now, currently as we speak, digging soil up in this attempt to occupy this land by a private citizen, a police chief at a local precinct, armed with machine guns and bringing with him several other armed men. We, too, are waiting for the arrival of international press and for the arrival of other internationals to apply pressure on the men who are currently destroying the land owned by these people. There was a court order that prevented the work from continuing, and it stopped for a short time. Now, as you hear, the work continues. Okay, so now the local constabulary seem to have arrived. We see a couple of men in blue shirts, blue trousers, carrying guns. They're approaching the side of the large hole that we're standing inside right now that has been made by this caterpillar. The three men who have been digging have stopped digging. The Israelis have handed the cease and desist order to the police officers who are arriving now. We're being asked to leave the area. There are now approximately 17 armed men from the Israeli military standing here, along with the local police officers, and they are directing the Israelis. We're not sure what the decision is at this point. And at this point, the local police seem to have asked them to stop. We're being asked to leave as well.